Brad and Brit, Brad and Brit, the perfect combination of brawn and wit. Politics, sports, and trending shit. Let's tune into Brad and Brit.
We're willing and able. It is the Brad and Brit cast. It's our live in the Thursday 1:30 Eastern hour version of this. We got a lot of things to take care of, but first I want to do some housekeeping. No, I don't. There's no housekeeping. It's a mess. Look behind me. It's a mess. That'd be the housekeeping we did.
Housekeeping.
Okay. The list is this: the most not guilty, the most innocent man in the world.
Oh boy.
4 months for the guy who gave us the Green Bay sweep. Yeah. And I'm not talking about Vince Lombardi. Transparent Trump's keys to victory.
Transparent Trump? Is that what you're calling it?
Yeah, not hiding it. Not hiding.
Is that like bombastic Bushkin?
Close. I'd do it all over again.
Okay.
The new double secret probation. This woman, Melanie Sofka, just died. She was 74. Uh-huh. And Woodstock, she shows up and does a couple of her songs. Including, I've got a brand new pair of roller skates. I got a brand new key. You know, now there's a song that doesn't get played on the oldies stations, does it? You never hear it.
Was it a Dr. Demento favorite? Was that one that he would play?
No. It was a major hit record. Yeah. She had a couple of other ones, and her biggest song was called "Lay Down, Candles in the Rain." She sang that at Woodstock with the Edwin Hawkins Singers.
Oh, there's okay. Something.
Yeah. That's a backup choir that money can't buy. I was looking at some old video today, and she sings that song on a show that was billed as the Johnny Carson of the Netherlands. Okay. So there was a guy, and there was always a Johnny Carson of the Netherlands or an Ed Sullivan of South Africa. There were all these people that modeled themselves after American shows. And she sings the song. Edwin Hawkins Singers are there. You know, there's about 20 people. It just sounds wonderful. But the best part of those old shows is when they cut to the audience. Okay. They cut to the audience. And it isn't a bunch of screaming girls like you'd see in the old Beatles clips, right? This is 1970. It's the Netherlands. And it's all these people who look about my age right now. They look like they're in their 60s and they're in suits and they're watching this hippie chick playing her guitar, singing this song with all these black people backing her up, the Edwin Hawkins Singers. And of course, everyone in the audience is white. It's the Netherlands. It's 1970.
And she's thinking, I need to get new management. I probably need to go ahead and grab some new management. Yeah, I don't know.
She had a couple great songs, but it's just one of those things. It's very, very selfish of me to probably talk about it. But
no, it was. It made the paper.
She had a couple of really good songs, and
she was fine.
She did continue to perform just about for all these years. I didn't see her anywhere, but what do I know? I'm nothing. I'm nobody.
When you go back to Woodstock, I've seen the movie. I've heard the soundtrack. I think, to me, Sly and the Family Stone was the best thing on there. I think they just blew everybody else off the stage. To me, I thought Sly and the Family Stone just killed.
Yeah.
Maybe just
Difficult conditions, I do believe. I'm heard.
Let's talk about that Green Bay sweep. You know, when John Madden, before he was coaching the Raiders, I think he was a college coach, and he went to the Vince Lombardi seminar, and he said they spent almost the entire freaking day just getting the vagaries and the logistics and every piece of minutia about how to run the – he remembers they went in like 8 o'clock, they break for lunch at noon, and they're like halfway through just running the Green Bay sweep.
Wow. You know, because to us, just – common football fans, we just thought that meant that the two guards, the guard and the tackle on the left side would come around, pulling guards and get with the right side and block and knock people over, and the running back was zipped through, and you'd have a 30-yard. It was more complex than that. Is that right?
Well, I think that's why Vince Lombardi was considered a pretty good coach.
Pretty good coach. All right. So here it is all these years later, and this asshole fuckface, Peter Navarro.
What do you think of him?
Had no credentials whatsoever to be any kind of real economic force in the Trump administration, which means he was an economic force in the Trump administration, an advisor to him. He got 4 months for contempt of Congress for refusing to show up with the January 6th committee saying, could you please come talk to us? Two counts of contempt of Congress. And he claims that their plan to overtake the government to reverse the results of the election, to do what needed to be done, they called it the Green Bay sweep. Okay. Which, by the way, it's still, when you think about it, is the most perverse, idiotic use of a common phrase only to older football fans who know what that means. And to everyone else, what does that mean? Because I noticed that whenever I would see him, whether he'd be interviewed on various shows, he went on with Ari Melber a lot on MSNBC. He thought he could take down Melber. He thought he could get him. Okay. So he'd keep going on the show and getting the shit kicked out of him by a smarter guy who's a real lawyer. But he thought he could beat Melbourne. And they would talk about the Green Bay, and they would never explain why it was called that. I guess it's just assumed that everybody knows that, which I don't think is true. Don't you think it's a bit jargonistic?
It's hugely jargonistic again, and it's like two generations removed from being somewhat relevant. If you're a huge football fan, I mean, and by the way, if I'll just paraphrase you, if Vince Lombardi was your hero, you blew it, Peter Navarro.
Well, he could have been your football coach hero, but you took that and kind of twisted it for your own purposes. In fact, that phrase is so dated that you never hear it used in being transferred to running games today, because there's still, there are variations of that play still that go on. Of course there are. I still try to run to one side, and
it's one of the most iconic. It is one of the most iconic plays in coach history, and any coach that's coaching now in the National Football League probably knows it, whether it's by that name or any other. But for him to just throw it out there, just as like, oh yeah, everybody, Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch, you know, I mean, right, nobody knows who that is.
Well, the problem is, some people might think the Green Bay sweep was Dick Van Dyke's cousin, who was a chimney sweep in the United States while he was doing it over in London during the Mary Poppins era.
Oh God, that's painful.
The problem.
Oh, yeah, that was so painful. Oh my God, give me a moment. I've been gut punched.
Wait. Are you taking Navarro's side now? Because
The last note that I will say about this, you know, the Republicans tried to co-opt Vince Lombardi to run for office. He considered himself a Kennedy Democrat, I believe. In fact.
Well,
back so in the day. But so the main point of what we're saying through all of this is that Peter Navarro is finally getting his comeuppance.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Britt, final question on the top. Which block of granite was Vince Lombardi? Let's predate the Green Bay sweep by another 40 years if we can. Well, okay.
At Fordham University.
Which block of granite was he at Fordham?
To me, he's just a piker. That Curly Lambeau, that was the last great coach the Green Bay ever had. I'll tell you that much right now.
There you go.
Jesus.
All right. The most not guilty, the most innocent man in the world. All right. Here it is. And I'm not seeing a lot of coverage on this. And I kind of think it should get a little more than it's gotten. Matt Gaetz, who, depending on your point of view, looks either like Max Headroom, Beavis, one of those characters.
Two. Like if Max Headroom and Beavis had a kid, that's who it would be.
That's it. He's circulating in the House a resolution. This is his idea. I'm going to read you the whole resolution here. It's not very long.
I'm ready.
It's only,
I'm ready.
Here it is. It says, big letters, in the House of Representatives, Mr. Gates submitted the following resolution, which was referred to the committee on, and you know, the date needs to be filled in. And in giant letters, it says, resolution expressing the sense of the House of Representatives that former President Donald J. Trump did not engage in insurrection or rebellion against the United States or give aid and comfort to the enemies thereof. Resolved that it is the sense of the House of Representatives that former President Donald J. Trump did not, quote, engage in insurrection or rebellion against the United States or give aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. That's the whole of the resolution. So far, or at least as of yesterday, 27 people signed on as co-sponsors. I'm just guessing they all were Republicans. But the very idea that at this late hour, this guy who is still under investigation for child sex trafficking and other things, and that's the best part of him, probably, would reach a new level of suck-upness and fealty by trying to codify, at least via a resolution, it's not binding to anything, but to be on record for the president, the famous audience of one, that we want you to know, sir, that we are positive you are the most innocent man in the world and you did not engage in insurrection or rebellion against the United States of America or give aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. Isn't that the definition of he doth protest too much and name all of the actual crimes that Trump is actually guilty of? Am I missing something there?
You're missing nothing. And by the way, it's in a rare moment of whatever, I let you go through the story. I didn't interrupt you. I didn't talk over you. You were able to set it up. And now I can tell you that please, please, please let this go forward. During a fucking election year, please have these people sign their names to something this stupid. That's how dumb these people are politically. There were people that did bullshit stuff in the past. Like Jesse Helms would do very ugly, nasty, awful things. But he had a political brain to him. He would not shoot himself in the foot politically. These assholes, months away from an election, please line up and put your name on this shit. Absolutely put yourself on the record as doing this. I beg you, let this go forward. I beg you, anybody that feels they're conscious and they need to do this, whether it's Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert or Biggs or Kat Kamick, that woman from Florida, whoever. Put your name in big fucking, I want a John Hancock signature on that shit all day long. Do it.
I try to think of the political calculation here and how, and keep in mind, remember, it was 127 Republicans who signed the petition right after Joe Biden took office that they essentially didn't accept the outcome of the election, 127 Republicans, remember that? Of course, didn't you think that, well, that was signing your own death warrant? And of course, it all fades away. So would something like this fade away also? It's the old, everything means nothing. It just doesn't matter how terrible it is. I would hope not. I hope you're right. I hope this is something that you could just weaponize and garrote people who would dare sign this. By the way, I could be wrong. I believe that Donald Trump is being held to account criminally and is likely to be found liable for at least some activities related to January 6th. So here you are proclaiming through your resolution that he is so not guilty. So I guess, of course, that would be, remember, on Fox or somewhere else, they would give that equal weight. They would give a resolution like that equal weight to a jury conviction of Donald Trump.
Sure.
Right, because this is what they do.
Yeah,
they conflate everything. They blow up something that is completely irrelevant, and they downplay the reality of what is going on. As day after day, the attempts to delay and shuck and jive and move everything further down continue to be, unfortunately, way too successful. I want you to think about this. I always think about this. They keep asking this question in polls to particularly Republicans, really only because we know the rest of us what we think. We don't have to be asked this, but they go, in a sense, would you think less of President Trump if he were convicted of one of the crimes related to January 6th or the documents case or something of that sort? Because obviously being convicted of rape or sexual assault or that obviously doesn't register with them. So they're asking if he gets convicted, and they don't even count the conviction that he already has before the election, would you be less likely to vote for Trump? And the number of Republicans who say, yeah, it varies from about 20 to 30%, which, of course, if they held to that truth and Trump was convicted, Trump would get swamped. He would get blown out of the water because he doesn't have that kind of a margin to lose 20% of the Republican base. Where are the other people going to come to make up that difference? Mars, Jupiter, they're going to fly in. We're going to let them in across the border. I'm amazed at that. But then you add in a stupid resolution like this, and I think you're totally right. This just adds to that collective weight, the atmospheric pressure that you can see building on Trump whenever he speaks. Because remember, he does know. All he's been doing for his whole life, but from the minute he came down that escalator at Trump Tower, is putting on a show. All right. And right now the show is getting close to closing. That's just not going to go on for another 4 years. And he knows it. Show is closing. And so what happens when the show starts to close? Yeah, yes. You get a little bit lazy. You get a little bit more stupid than you normally are, which is what he is doing. I mean, his just unvarnished, misogynistic, insane, baseless, lying attacks on Nikki Haley, who I thought he was in the process of easily dispatching her. You would think he would do the Robert Conrad Ever-Ready battery, brush her off his shoulder routine, but he can't do that, right? It's not in his makeup. So he always has to go, 190% against someone and make fun of the way she dresses, which, again, it's funny. He will go after someone for whom, of all the things you want to say about Nikki Haley, you know what? She dresses pretty nicely. She wears nice dresses. She just does. And I don't know who he thinks he's talking to when he makes fun of the blue dress she was wearing the other night. It was a nice dress. Well, it really wasn't such a nice dress, was it?
That was like the weird, I don't know where he's going with that. I have no idea what that was about.
Yeah.
And he said something like, it was a nice dress, but you're going to find out later, maybe it wasn't such a nice dress. What are you doing? What the fuck? Get the Prevagen in this guy. Get him like an IV with Prevagen in it. Something.
Oh, it comes from jellyfish, right?
Yeah, just make him eat a jellyfish, for God's sake. I think you're looking right now at a bunch of Republicans in the House, particularly the quote-unquote mainstream ones, not the super crazy ones, although they are pretty much all crazy, but I think they're freaking out because they feel like their time is running short. They fucked up for a couple of years now and they've not done shit, and now they're going to get called on it, and now they're probably going to have to pick another speaker before the election. It's just bad.
Well, assuming that the ones who aren't in, the super safe 70-30 can't lose districts, And of course, those people, you know, don't have to hold town hall meetings. They won't hold debates. But if you're in anything even remotely closer than that, you are going to have to face voters and you're going to have to face members of the press. And you are going to be asked to defend Donald Trump. Now, I'm sure they're formulating a list of talking points on how you respond to that, which starts with, I'm not Donald Trump. He's running his own race. I'm here for the people of X, wherever X is. And we have different priorities. And I'm sure they're going to try to do that, but it's not going to work. It's just not going to work because you are going to have to defend the fact that he brags about appointing three Supreme Court judges who overturned the rights of women to choose an abortion. And you have to defend that because it could come up for a vote in the Congress if either guy is elected, if Biden or if Trump is elected. How would you vote? So they're going to have to answer all this stuff. So that's the difference between the silly season, which is really what we're in right now, where no one is being held to an accountable answer for anything at this moment. You can just keep walking and say, I didn't hear that. I didn't see that. I don't know what you're talking about. But there's always a moment where that runs out. You can't do it anymore. And you gotta say something. We're kind of just biding our time here. So the new double secret probation, you ready?
Yeah. As made that, famous in the film Animal House.
Right. That's permanently barred from MAGA. That's the new double secret probation. Okay. And this was Trump on Wednesday, just losing his shit. And again, I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but somebody has to clean his underwear. And boy, yesterday must have been a bad day.
Bad day.
He threatened people who would dare to donate to Nikki Haley's campaign right now with excommunication forever, saying that he would refuse contributions from anybody who donated to her primary campaign. All right, let's mark that one down on the tape, Snerdly. Has Donald Trump ever turned down a dollar from anyone?
Hell no.
Ever? Right. Okay. All right. But putting that aside, because he's lying. He always lies. He said, when I ran for office and won. Now, this is a social media post. When I ran for office, and he capitalized O in office and won, I noticed that the losing candidate's donors would immediately come to me and want to help out. This is standard politics, but no longer with me. No longer with me. And his nickname for Nikki Haley, I guess right now, is Bird Brain. Bird Brain.
What is that?
Yeah. From this moment forth, you will be permanently barred from the MAGA camp. We don't want you. We will not accept you. Because we put America first and always will. So it's just like double secret probation. You will never be in the MAGA club again. You know, that's a pretty good gamble for somebody, I would think, because after the election loss that is going to occur for him on November, whatever it is, there will be no MAGA club to have to worry about, will there? And he will not be the head of it anymore. This is his last shot. God almighty. What?
I do a little bit wonder how Nikki Haley is like trailing by 50 points or something like that in South Carolina. I didn't see her as being that unpopular as a governor, at least compared to him in South Carolina. I thought she could at least come within like 20 of him.
See, you are having a problem getting inside the mind of a cultist.
Obviously.
You really are. You really are. Because you're right. She she got elected there. Didn't she win twice? Wasn't she a two-term governor there? A couple of times.
And she was, yeah. I mean, she claimed credit for bringing Boeing there. And it's funny, just all these mechanical problems with Boeing seem to have taken place since they moved to South Carolina. It's weird.
Yeah, so that's her fault.
it's just weird.
I'm surprised Trump hasn't blamed her for that.
Used to have beautiful big planes. Everybody knows it. Then they moved to Nikki makes them fuck up. Planes, doors blowing off in midair.
Yeah, it would be typical for Trump to do something that thoughtless.
That'd be great. And
that disconnected from Nikki Haley helping to bring Boeing maybe to South Carolina. Because remember, one of the reasons they wanted to start building the planes in South Carolina as opposed to only in the state of Washington, because they could go non-union.
Of course.
Right? Here's Donald Trump, the most anti-union president in the history of presidents, who has no right, no standing, not a lick of credibility to attack non-union workers in South Carolina building Boeing planes. And by the way, it isn't 100% proven that a group of workers anywhere that they assemble these planes is responsible, because there's another company that builds all the shit that Boeing assembles. But I wouldn't put it past Trump. Why are we even thinking that there needs to be proof? If he can make an illegitimate, ill-founded connection.
You know, I know the guy with Boeing, good friends for a long time. I told him, I said, don't move to South Carolina. Your planes are going to be shit. I told him a long time ago. Also, I'll tell you another thing. BMW. They built BMW in South Carolina. It used to be a great car. Now it's a piece of shit. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Awful. Yeah. Falls apart all the time. Michelin tires. Don't buy them. Never buy them. Fall apart. Pieces of shit.
It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. All right. Transparent Trump's keys to victory as he sees it today. Don's plan is more open borders and a depression now, fast. Bring it on. So the conscience of the Senate, the man for whom you really, when you get his word, it's as good as Kentucky bourbon. Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, after all this time, has now reversed himself on the plan that the Senate came up with on immigration reform that Joe Biden is ready to sign off on. But now suddenly Mitch McConnell gets a phone call from Trump, or maybe his assistant gets a call from Trump, and Trump says, do not pass this once-in-a-generation legislation on immigration reform and sealing up the border better than it has been for the last few years, which is what we all want. Everybody wants that, right?
Allegedly.
It's tougher and more punitive than the Democratic Party has really been stand. But you know what? You don't get 100% of what you want. So there was that horrible word compromise, and it was done in the Senate and it was ready to be looked at over in the House. Trump said to Mike Johnson, don't even think about it. He told McConnell, fuck you. Don't even think about continuing to support this. McConnell said, oh, yes, sir. And now it's just hanging there because the accusation by Democrats that the Republicans would rather have the issue to demagogue and run against in election after election, year after year, decade after decade on immigration. If this isn't ultimate proof of that, nothing is. Because just on the cusp, just on the edge of making real progress, I hate to use this phrase, it's very much a politician's phrase, for the American people, Trump says, I don't want that, because how can I run on immigration if the Congress does something responsible? And God forbid that Joe Biden has a signing ceremony with Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, and Mitch McConnell and other Republicans and other Democrats all standing around him as he signs it and hands out the pens and the whole. I can't have that. I need to be able to demagogue and lie about this. They're bringing in disease. They're bringing in arms. They're terrorists. I can't be saying that anymore if there's legislation that fixes that. So that's one of Donald Trump's wishes for right now. And of course, the other one is, and this is a real problem for him, the economic numbers just keep getting better. They just keep getting better as inflation cools off. I know the price of a bag of potato chips today is not what it was in 2018. But what's being shown by the numbers month after month, quarter after quarter, is people are adjusting to higher prices. And they are making, in the main, higher wages and are able to adjust. And their bank accounts are as flush as they were in 2018 and 2019. And stock market values are as high as, how shall we say it, they've ever been, higher than ever, really.
Ever. Unemployment still low as shit.
Right. So Donald, a soft landing isn't when you just roll over on the hooker and say, nice job, chick. That's not a soft landing.
Now, that one you landed. You did very well on that one. The one with the Dick Van Dyke earlier, you really struggled with. But that one you killed. You nailed that one.
I'm just making these up as I go along. You think I got cue cards in front of me here? So he wants a stock market break. He wants a Herbert Hoover situation, not for himself, but for Joe Biden, because Hoover became president at the beginning of 1929. And then, 8 months later, in October of 29, you had the stock market crash and what is traditionally thought of as the beginning of the depression that lasted several years. And Hoover got booted from office and FDR got elected in 1932. And a lot of people don't know this. FDR, who I think at that time was still governor of New York in 28, 29, he was cheering for a depression, just like Trump. But you don't hear about that in the history books, do you? Right? FDR, they let him get away with it then. You know, he would go on cable TV. He would send out all kinds of tweets about hoping that the market would crash and, you know, sell your RCA stock now. Get out now. RCA was a big stock back then. Same thing. Of course, that's not true. But this is just not a good situation for Trump. This is always true. What's good for the American people, what's good for the country, what's good for the economy is bad, theoretically, or the party that's out of power that's trying to tell you that things are worse than they are. And to a certain extent, the Democrats play a similar game, but they're not. No one is as explicit about it as Trump has ever been.
You almost kind of played the what about game, or they both do the so.
Yeah, I didn't. I'm not playing to both sides, but yeah, it's a kind of a traditional thing.
Heard Bill Clinton, when Bill Clinton was running against Daddy Bush, he never said, "God, I hope the economy keeps going in the shitter and goes way worse because it's going to be good for us." You never would hear that,
right?
Nobody would say that.
And I apologize if you think I was both sidesing it there. Because I'm not. But, you know, the party that's out of power has kind of an interest in going in that direction a little bit. But, of course, never like this.
No.
And never so blatant, never so obvious in saying what he's saying, so that he can be, you know, Superman. He can be Ultraman. He can be Aquaman.
Ultraman.
And then you hear morons go, well, you know, he is a businessman. That's why I'm voting for him. That's why I liked what he did the first 4 years. He's a good bit. Well, no, he's not. And he isn't, and he wasn't, and he won't be. And by the way, remember, you know who was a businessman? Herbert Hoover.
Yeah, 100%. Well, we've only had one president, I think, to date that's had an MBA. I think we've only had one, and that guy was, you know, there when the worst economic situation happened since the Depression. So yeah,
nobody's saying that if we just had an MBA as president, that everything would be better.
I bet you there are some people in country. I bet you there are some Republicans in country clubs across America that are saying that we just need somebody with them, because they still get into that whole this thing run like a business.
Britt,
we
got to have somebody that runs the government against education now, Britt. Oh, they don't believe in college degrees for anybody anymore.
Except for
who went 25 years ago and they got one.
You went to the Wharton School of Business, unless you took a management class at the Wharton School of Business, in which case they think education's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
The phrase that I always wear out, and people have heard me wear it out over the years, and I got it from 20 years ago, whenever things were happening badly in Iraq, Rush Limbaugh would always say, bad news for America is good news for Democrats. And I always turn that around on them now. Every single time one of those economic numbers comes out, you know, good news for America is bad news for Republicans. And I will never back away from that, because they loved it. They like to think that when we got some bad news in Iraq and some Americans had died, that Democrats were partying in the streets, jacking off and smoking doobies. They used to think and that's not at all how it went, but that's the illustration that they like to have. But there's no question now that if the economy did start going in the shitter, they would be partying. They would be getting drunk and having a great time.
You just said something I'm so thankful that Rush Limbaugh's dead.
I know, isn't it? It's been a great couple of years for America.
Can you imagine how much worse things would be? How much worse the atmosphere would be is... if he were in his prime and thrown the kind of crap on the pile,
you know,
that he used to throw.
It'll be I think it'll be 3 years next month. And it's just great. It's been almost 1,000 days right around there. And it's like the air is sweeter. You know, America has been better. America has thrown off the yoke of a lot of stuff in the past 1,000 days or so. We just can't get this one piece of shit that apparently smears his face with mud before going to a press conference. At least that's what happened in New Hampshire. What was that makeup job? That was the weirdest shit I've seen. It did kind of look like the old Al Jolson, or maybe if you've seen Birth of a Nation, where they're doing the blackface and then the guy's super sweaty and everything. That's kind of like what Trump looked like the other night.
Well, you know, makeup for movies and for the stage and for television, I guess there are three different kinds and levels of thickness and mixtures and stuff. And Trump, he wasn't on stage. He wasn't in a movie.
Okay? No.
And he wasn't really, but he was giving a live performance. But because you're in a situation where the lighting is not produced by some television producer to make you look as good as possible, what it does is it accentuates the kind of stuff that you get away with when you're sitting there, say, with Sean Hannity on Fox, where the lighting and the focus is just right to make you look as good as possible. I'm talking about Donald Trump looking as good as possible from whatever angle. And that's all gone in these spontaneous situations where they come out after a primary and have to give a speech. It's just bright lights in a hotel room or in a ballroom. And I think that's what you saw. And you know, if I were Trump, I'd reassess the whole thing. I mean, I might come out in the famous New Orleans Saints bag over my head, okay, like the fans used to do when they were the Aints.
Now, was it Amos or Andy behind him? I wasn't able to tell the difference. I wasn't able to really distinguish. I'm sorry, I couldn't.
Well, those were two white guys playing black guys. So,
Fucking Tim Scott. Can you please have some moment of reflection so you don't look like some dude like on a like on a pancake box or something? Jesus Christ, you look so stupid back there kissing his ass.
Uncle Tim's converted rice.
I swear to God, it's the worst thing ever. And it's like, I don't know that he, again, I just wonder, I know Trump doesn't. Does Tim Scott have anyone in his life, maybe at that Bible group that he supposedly went to that hooked him up with his soon-to-be wife, that can say to him, you know, you look pretty bad up there. Like, black people have been working hundreds of right. years not to look the way you look. Right.
You ask this about everybody.
I do,
and it's never true, because by definition you're surrounding yourself with people who are supportive of you. If they are critical of you, if they tell you the unvarnished truth, what do? With them, you throw them overboard. I don't want to hear it. I'm not interested in hearing it. I'm the best there ever was. I'm the best there will ever be. Get out. What do you mean? I looked like an idiot the other night when I said, I love you, Donald Trump. What do you mean I'm an idiot for like, saying that?
Like your mom or your sister or somebody would call him. You look really stupid when you say that to him. You just look like a piece of shit. You look like you're sucking up to him so badly. Could you just stop that for half a second and have some dignity in your life?
He achieved the office of U.S. Senator being the way he is, keeping in mind he was appointed originally by, that's right, Nikki Haley.
That's right.
And when Trump would run through that shtick about Ron DeSantis, for whom, if it wasn't for him, Trump, DeSantis would be nothing. He came into my office begging, tears running down his face.
Sir, please
endorse me, sir. Please, sir. And I did. And he won his election against that black guy. I can't remember his name. The drug guy. He beat him. And this is what he does. He runs against me.
Right.
So does that same standard apply to Tim Scott, who in his case is even more beholden to Nikki Haley than Ron DeSantis was to Trump, because Trump just endorsed him and DeSantis got elected? In the case of Tim Scott, he was just a garden variety shitty congressman, and Nikki Haley tapped him inside the state of South Carolina, and overnight he's a senator. And then he won an election, you know, a few years later. So for him to turn on her and proclaim his love for Donald Trump, to me, is much, much more of an explicit betrayal of something that you really should be. That really should be a lifetime thing where, you know, Nikki, thank you. There's, you know, I really wouldn't be where I am without
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
It's really true. It's really true. But it's not the way.
Well, my key and my hope for this thing is doing a callback on Trump as he starts referring to Tim Scott as my African American. Look at my African American.
I think if he just goes with my Tim.
My Timmy. Oh, God.
Because you never hear him. He's never Timmy. So Trump will bastardize the name, right? He will infantize it, because Timmy is, you know, that's what a five-year-old boy gets called, right?
And then later that's called right.
Tim. So I'm looking for that one, my Timmy. And by the first time you hear that, you have to drink an entire bottle of scotch, okay? That'll be the drinking game for my Timmy. if he refers to him as that. And one last thing, and this is a very, very disturbing story and an inside view as to really where we are. It is having to do with the conviction on Wednesday of one of these Proud Boy guys. Remember, there are hundreds of them, thousands of them that are moving through the system. It's getting more difficult to convict all the time because the Supreme Court is starting to throw up some roadblocks here and things of that sort. But they got this guy, His name is Mark Brew, B-R-U. He got 6 years. Brew called the judge, whose name is James Boasberg, a clown and a fraud. And he said, I will never apologize for my actions, regardless of how long you throw me into the clink. He's a sovereign citizen type.
Okay. Well, there we go.
And the quote is, you could give me 100 years and I'd do it all over again. So these people are still there. And Donald Trump has labeled people like this guy. He's not in jail yet, officially, but he will be. He's another hostage, right? Mm-hmm. He's another hostage who needs to be freed. So apparently during the trial, this Brew character was going nuts, mouthing off. You're on thin ice. I'm going to kick you out of the courtroom if you continue. But he is a member of the Sovereign Citizen Movement, and he insisted during his trial that he did not, quote unquote, consent, air quotes, to the prosecution. Said, you're outside of your jurisdiction, judge. You got no business judging me. I don't consent to this. You've trafficked me. You've committed war crimes against me. And I would do it again on orders from Donald Trump if I just got them. So this guy is at the bottom of the list, or the top of the list, depending on how you look at it, as one of the least remorseful of the January 6th rioters. Apparently, he stood there for like 2 hours during January 6th and just was yelling and pummeling cops and things of that sort. Just the worst of the worst.
Good God.
And his plan was that he was going to go back home to the state of Washington and make plans to lead a violent armed insurrection to take over the government. I guess he was not from the state of Washington. He's from Oregon. He was going to take over the government in Portland, Oregon, Jesus, the state government, just a few weeks afterwards. So that's what's there. That's the Trump base. That's the real hardcore Trump base. And they're ready to do it again. And Trump is already laying all of the groundwork for, if I lose, the election is rigged. He was playing the election is rigged games for the New Hampshire primary, of course he won.
Yep.
He always does that because that way, when all the press says that he didn't quite win by the margin that he said he was, well, he's going to be able to say, you know, it was rigged. They couldn't quite rig it completely for me to lose, but they rigged the margin, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that that's kind of what he did in 2016, right? He was insistent that he really didn't lose the popular vote to Hillary Clinton. And remember, they had investigations for months and months and months and months, couldn't find any. This is in 2016.
Exactly.
And turns out that it wasn't rigged against him at all. So that's the setup. That's a depressing concept here that, you know, over 3 years after January 6th, we have people like that who not only have not learned their lesson, they are hardened in their loyalty to one person, to one guy, to Donald J. Trump, who, by the way, would, of course, abandon them in 2 seconds.
Surely.
And would show about as much loyalty to them as I will show to this piece of scotch tape. I'm very loyal to you, scotch tape.
Fuck you. I'm throwing away.